Today's program was brought to you by Roth, Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Last time we had Sue Miller of Birch Run Hills and Rachel Fritz-Schall of Parish Hill Creamery on the show earlier this year, they hinted at a special collaboration they're working on. I'm excited to announce that they're here, along with Peter Dixon. Well, actually, Sue's on her way here. She's stuck in traffic, but she'll get here. And they're all here to talk about that collaboration, the Cornerstone Project. Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show today and for being here with me at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. The last time you were here, we had an awesome meal together with Mike Gino. That was super tasty.
And that was excellent.
Yeah. I wanted to start off by asking you, Rachel, what's the Cornerstone Project all about?
Well, to me, the Cornerstone Project is about encouraging American cheesemakers to trust their milk and trust their craft and make great American cheese.
Same for you, big guy?
For me, it's about the elemental nature of cheesemaking. That to make a original cheese in the U.S., we're going to go back in time, just like it happened in Europe and other parts of the world, with the ingredients. What are they? Well, the milk has to be raw. Back in time, pasteurization didn't exist.
This is true.
The culture is to ferment the milk, which came into vogue eventually to help jumpstart the process and bring about a more higher quality, I guess, or, you know, the quality of the product more uniform. You could count on the fermentation happening more regularly if you used a starter culture.
Okay.
So what was that culture? They had to make it themselves. There wasn't anywhere to buy these things, so they would have fermented some of the milk on the side and made it into like a yogurt and then added that to the big pot of milk to make their batch. The other ingredients, rennet. Well, we would love to make our own rennet to bring about the cornerstone cheese, but that's something that I've found in my own experience takes a lot longer to develop.
Certainly.
We're working on it.
We're working on that at Parish Hill Creamery, and the other cheesemakers that make Cornerstone will learn how to do that, and we'll decide as a group where we're going to go with that. The final ingredient, salt, it's got to come from somewhere local.
Sure.
I mean, back in the old times, where'd you get your salt? From a mine in a mountain, from the ocean, where it was solar evaporated along the East Coast. And since we're from Vermont, we looked over to Maine.
Yeah, you got good salt in Maine, right?
And there's this company there, the Maine Sea Salt Company, that we get our salt from.
That's awesome.
So that's it.
What inspired you to do this? Is it the need for all these things that you're talking about?
Yeah, the match strike was the, what was that, 2015?
Yeah, the Providence American Cheese Society conference.
What about it?
There was a call to cheesemakers to make more American original cheeses.
By one of the judging committee people.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the stage, he put it out there. Where are the American original cheeses? We want more of them.
Huh. And there's a little bit of frustration, I guess, on the part of the folks who are taking part in this project that the cheeses that are that place in that category tend to be cheeses that are made in European styles.
Sure, the recipes come from there.
And you know, we're not claiming there's anything new under the sun. I mean, certainly everything that we're doing comes from those same recipes, from those same practices.
Yeah.
But instead of trying to, well, for me, what's key is instead of saying, okay, there's a cheese and we want to make a copy of that or a version of that, instead we're starting with our milk and then designing a recipe that will hopefully allow that milk to really show its essence.
Yeah, cheese is still going to come. Cheese is still cheese, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's still
going to be cheese.
It's still milk culture Renaissance.
Sure enough.
That's what we're working with here.
Yep.
You know?
So there were really four cheese-making companies sitting at a table in Willimantic, Connecticut at a pub talking about
it's
this.
The best place to get stuff done.
There you go. And it was Mystic Cheese. It was Bertrand Hills. And it was... myself from Parish Hill Creamery. The fourth came along because we thought he should definitely be included, and that's Cato Corner Farm.
Sure.
We thought being a raw milk cheesemaker, being someone who's very elemental about the way he approaches cheesemaking, this is Mark Gilman I'm talking about, who people in New York know that brand very well. They're at farmers markets all around the city.
Yeah.
And I've always liked his approach, and I've worked with them. So the four of us decided we should collaborate together on this and come up with a simple recipe. And basically all it is a cooked curd, lightly pressed cheese, and it's made in a square form, and it's made from raw milk with these ingredients I mentioned. And then we find out how they differ from farm to farm, by the maker, by the cave it's aged in, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but you're getting a structure that it can exist in that's very clear, that's so you can examine the raw materials. That seems to be what you're getting at.
Removing some of the enough variables that hopefully we'll actually be able to discern what is different in the breed and feed, what is different in that area, that particular geographical area, what's different in what's on our hands and what's in our cage.
Yeah, totally. You're going to let those things express themselves. Why is it called Cornerstone?
Well...
you want me to jump in?
Go ahead.
Yeah, talk to
think
me.
Think of a foundation. Uh-huh. What holds the foundation together? The cornerstone.
Yeah.
And that's why we made it in a square.
Yeah,
it looks kind of like a paving stone.
Yeah, it does. So, it's a beautiful cheese.
So that was the whole idea behind that name.
What have been your biggest challenges in getting this off the ground?
Getting everybody to
start making it, because everyone's busy and starting to bring in another cheese and an already solid repertoire, which all of these makers have. Is not gonna happen quickly, and it's something, especially with the elemental nature of the way this cheese is made. It takes extra time. You actually have to make the ingredients before you can make the cheese.
Right. Yeah. Well, you need the milk, right?
But you need to make the culture.
Well, that's the most.
Yourself.
Yeah, that's the most. That's the key thing right there. Come on in, Sue. Come on in. New York City traffic is a bitch, let me tell you right now.
You made it.
So happy that you're here, Sue. Oh, you need some headphones? You got to set right there. Good stuff. Now we've got all of our guests assembled. Hi, Sue. How are you?
Great. I'm glad I'm finally here.
Yeah. It's fantastic to see you.
It's great to see you.
We were just going over the origins of your wonderful project, the Cornerstone Project. And I asked these guys, how it came to be. And, they said it came from like any great idea. It was born out of a drinking session at the American Cheese Society conference at the bar there. Is that true?
Yeah, pretty much. We got a couple of cheeseheads together and we were inspired by the conference. And, the idea was born. I don't know if you guys talked about Brian Civitello before I stepped in.
I mentioned Mystic.
Just Mystic, but not Brian himself.
Yeah. So Brian really was kind of the seed for this project.
He was the one.
John Greeley
brought it up.
At the conference said what he wanted to challenge cheesemakers to do was to come up with their own American original cheeses. And so that was a concept that was, near and dear to Peter Dixon and Rachel Shaw's heart, as well as the rest of us at the table. And, we just took it and ran, pretty much, that idea.
You guys touched on it. I think that it's worth saying that that's a tough category, right? American originals is a tough category, and it would seem to be fairly subjective as to what does and doesn't get to place in those categories, and that might be fairly discouraging, perhaps, to people, to cheesemakers who think that that's what they're making. You know, I see a lot of heads nodding.
Yeah. Well, again, one thing I said earlier, I really feel like we want to encourage cheesemakers, American cheesemakers, to trust that milk, to really make sure that they're using the best quality milk, to make sure that to see what their milk does when it clabbers, to see what they get in terms of an acidifying culture from their milk.
And that's really that's the real key. And pardon me, I'm a little slow on the pickup, but you really want people to start creating their own native cultures.
That's one of the keys to the whole project is spreading that ability, spreading that and desire to go that route as a cheesemaker.
Well, as a cheesemonger, I find that I'm excited for that, because what I find and is that I get a lot of cheese that you can engineer or that has been engineered. Mm-hmm. And you make cheese with a culture that you purchase, and it highlights and isolates certain portions of the milk, and you get a product that people think is good, but they don't know why it's good, and they don't know why their cheddar doesn't taste like other cheddars. You know what I mean? And it gets a little convoluted. Would you agree?
Yes. He would. He's nodding.
Well, I mean,
vigorously.
And that's a big step, you know.
Pete was talking about the way that you would
Well, for farmstead producers it is. I mean, for people who are entirely certain of the source of milk, it would seem to be that would be a good way to, let the milk express itself.
It's the next step.
Yeah.
I mean, once you for those cheesemakers who have made sure, I mean, they have done the work either with their own herd to get that excellent milk, or have worked with a really good dairy farmer who's able to produce cheese quality milk.
Yeah.
So they have this, the most important thing, the only thing that is that you can actually guarantee, that is guaranteed in making great cheese.
Yeah.
So once they have that, to actually go, take that leap and see what their milk can do.
Have you noticed flavor differences in your cheese?
Well, we made the first season that we produced, we had a short season, just Pear Shell Creamery's whole lineup, where we actually did use direct vat set cultures. And then, so that was for 3 months. And then after that, ever since, we've been making cheese with our own native cultures.
Great.
And certainly the switch from the direct vat set to the native cultures was noticeable. I think that our mongers noticed it.
Yeah.
We certainly noticed it.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is exciting because what it does is it really gets to the core.
Yeah.
The core, the beginning of a cheese is the milk, and if we can culture that and start with that. And certainly there has been a difference between Cornerstone made at Parish Hill and Cornerstone made at Birch Run. It's really interesting, the little nuances between the milk. And we certainly have more to explore as we continue this process. But it's really intriguing to see, even texturally, the hand of the cheesemaker is very different,
Sure.
Even though we've made this cheese together a couple of times, there are nuances, differences in the actual coming from the vat and from the milk where it's made.
That's brilliant.
No. You want me to jump in?
Please go on, sir.
All right.
Leap.
Well, I keep bringing up the word elemental, because it is stripped down to the kind of cheese making I've experienced when I've worked in other countries, like say in Macedonia, where they didn't have refrigeration per se, so the milk had to be very good to make very good cheese, and it would come in, or in Armenia, the same thing. It would come in, the cheesemaker would either have picked it up or someone who worked for them would have gone and picked up this milk. So they had these relationships with the farmers that were very small scale, or they had their own small farm that they sourced milk from. And the milk was ready to go. They didn't even need to make a culture.
Wow.
Because it had all the microbes in it that you would need. It was already fermenting by the morning.
Sure.
And all they had to do was warm it up to and add the rennet.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the most elemental approach. But it can be more haphazard than when you make a milk culture. And so by bringing that in, you're moving a little bit forward in time and technology. But it's still an essentially bare-bones way to make cheese. And the thing about what we've experienced at Paris Hill Creamery is since we make all of our cheese from that kind of culture that comes from originally four different cows, it's really the recipe that shapes the flavor profile and texture of the cheese, because it's things like temperature and time and size of curd and all that reduces moisture content down to make a hard cheese versus a soft cheese. Then the final layer that you add is going to be two layers. There's going to be the salt, because all salt is not the same.
No, not really.
So if you're going to source a local salt and say, well, this is what I have to go with, that's going to shape the essential flavor of your cheese. And finally, you move it into the aging process, and it's totally about the environment. You know, what wood am I aging that cheese on? What kind of rocks are in that cave, or is it concrete, or is it fiberglass?
Sure.
You know, whatever, that's going to shape the ultimate. What I would just throw out there, if you really want to create the taste of a place, this is the way you do it.
Sure.
You know, it's got to be stripped down to the essential elements, and then you get the true link to the land that milk was produced on and that the cheese was made and then aged as a part of.
Yeah, it becomes a real snapshot.
Yeah.
Like a real, real snapshot.
Really interesting.
Yeah,
and then you get to taste it and see how that evolves from season to season.
Sure.
Or from Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania, to southeastern Vermont.
That's brilliant.
To central Connecticut. You know, we want to see all this. And that's what's exciting about it. As time goes on, we'll get to experience it. Mongers will get to experience it with us.
Yeah, I like that. Some folks have called this America's first DOC type situation, since you're all using the same recipe with your own native cultures. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think that's really interesting. We don't want to really limit cheesemakers across the country, because this is a project that we think can really grow all across the nation, and it can become its own sense of place, say, you know, in the heartland too. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know where their salt's coming. Maybe there's the underground
salt. They have salt mines.
The salt mines, right, sure, out in Utah. So, I mean, we are pretty excited about that, having this identity that is coming from the very basic of everything, you know, of what we do. And it's exciting to kind of take a fresh approach to a very old form of cheese making.
I like it because, like I said, it gives a structure, like a, you know, like a certain cohesion to the process, and it limits if you're going to make this cheese with you guys, you know, or you're going to make it, you can't, like I said, you can't engineer in other flavors by using other cultures, you know. So, and I've always kind of yearned for that. You know, as a person, like, I've sold cheese for a long period of time, where I used to get a lot of European cheese that absolutely were made this way, you know. Now I get a little bit less of that type of cheese, and I get cheeses that are called that or they look like that, but they're not quite that. And when I dig down, it's really that. It's like, it's what are they acidifying the milk with, and then and what salt, you know, what are the raw materials, what are the elements that that they're using? That's cool.
There are actually a couple of other delimiting factors if you want to be a part of the project.
Yeah.
Eventually, we are hoping we want to hold off for a little bit, because we want to make sure that the four initial participants can have an opportunity to really develop this project.
Yeah,
but eventually, it would be great to see cheesemakers from other parts of the country like Sue alluded to, taking part in the project and just see what does this cheese taste like when it's made in various parts of the country.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of other delimiting factors, and one of them is single herd.
Right.
So it does not have to be farmstead. We are not farmstead. Sue is. But
you got to know where the milk's coming from.
But you have
from,
to, yeah. So one herd, and then another one, I hope I didn't forget any, but the other one is no one can make more than 5,000 pounds annually.
Mm. That's something we're discussing.
What's that all about?
So that no one company could come in and glut the market.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
To make sure that it is a project, and that it's a project that many cheesemakers, that many cheeses can come from, and it doesn't just become one market-wide product.
Certainly, because there's a lot of milk out there that people can gather. And sort of, I've been hammering this home in the last couple of podcasts. Maybe you can give me your opinion on this, and then we'll take a break. But what I always like about cheese, like, and I tell people this, and I tell people this at the counter, like, you can engineer in the flavor. You really can. You know, you can make a cheddar taste like Gruyere if that's what you really want to do, and people will like that. But the texture of the cheese is, to me, the real sort of, that's the one you can't really fake. You know what I mean? Like, or to me, that when I get way down in there, it's like, what's the texture of this cheese? You know, and I guess that happens also in the way the curds are cut and the amount of salt that you use and how long it's aged out. You know,
you might be onto something there, because when you think about it, flavor comes from the initial milk, and a large part of that is what they're feeding. Okay, but it's a microbial world in that milk. Or I shouldn't even say but. It just is a microbial world in that milk, characterized by environment and feed and these things that go into producing the milk. And so when you're thinking about how you can engineer, well, and ultimately those microbes are in the milk, and the enzymes will break down the fats and proteins to eventually make the flavor of the cheese, right? So in a sense, because there's all these known cultures out there with known strains of bacteria, you can engineer the flavor. But the craft of the cheesemaker is what determines the texture.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you can't actually.
Absolutely.
That's very well put. You can't fake the texture.
You just can't do it, you know? And
what
so,
he said.
No faking.
What he said. Good
that's,
one.
That's awesome. It's great to talk to you guys. I'm happy you're here. We're going to take a short break. Then we come back. We're going to talk a little bit about cheese cultures a little more and some hot topics. Hot.
Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sirchois is the 2016 world champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sirchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sirchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolet and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. This is Greg Blaze, and before the break, we were talking about the Cornerstone Project. Now that we're back, I wanted to talk a little bit about rennet and culture specifically. I heard you were making your own rennet at Parish Hill. What are the regular? Is that true? Right? This is true. It's not a rumor.
Took a stab at it this summer.
What are the regulations around that like? What's that all about?
Well, in order to do it, to make cheese for commercial sale, your stomachs, the abomasums of whatever animal you choose, typically it'd be a calf, a kid from a goat, or a lamb.
Hardy har.
I knew you.
It was almost
that
the last time we were here. Yeah. You talked to me about the salty knob of Parachill. That was a Hall of Fame quote for
me. Let's steer to the right hand side.
Yeah.
Of this discussion.
You got it.
Which means back on track.
Yeah.
From him.
Nice.
I know what could happen, Greg, if you and I get going. So
it's going to be a problem.
I know. But the ladies are here. So. Yes. Well, we'll call it a vel. The cured stomach, paper thin kind of material, ready to be chopped up and soaked and then made into a liquid preparation to add to the milk to coagulate it. So that vel has to come from a USDA inspected facility.
Okay.
It can be cured by you at your facility, but just like any food safety plan for any ingredient and in your process, you're going to have to document how you prepare it.
Certainly.
Yeah. And so, it's a process of brine curing the stomach and then drying it. And then they're incredibly stable once they get to that point.
Really?
This is no joke. I mean, this is like the way cheese...
There's a reason why it's been being done like this for thousands of years.
You hang them up in your house and you just pull it down and cut some off and chop it up and soak it in whey. And then the next morning, you've got this preparation that's fermented. The microbes from the vel, from the stomach, are now in a media, the whey, that has some sugar. They ferment it, make an acid kind of liquid that's got the enzymes from the rennet to coagulate the milk. So you've got a two-in-one thing.
That's
cool.
You've
got a microbial culture.
Started and
the rennet enzyme all together, and you put that into the milk. And that's ultimately how I would like to make some of the batches of this cheese to see how it goes. I know from hearing Thomas the Monger, what's his last name?
Tom Perry.
Who did the research on cultures as part of the Daphne Zephos Award, give his presentation at ACS in Des Moines. And he was documenting how for the Gruyere, the Emmentaler, the Appenzeller, some of the makers use this kind of preparation. So, I'd like to give that a try on the cornerstone. Or maybe we'll do both, the milk culture and the rennet preparation.
Maybe that'll be another cheese for the cornerstone.
Right. Project.
Well, that's the thing, because you can branch out into other cheeses.
Other processes, other recipes that still fall within that overarching
project. Right.
And, going back to that Greg's question about the DOP, I mean, that's really how you get at that.
It is.
You would stick with one variant of it, and that everyone would have to do it like that, and then there's a distinctive cheese being made.
Yeah. I'm smiling because a couple of weeks ago we were all together, the three of us, and it was a late night, and Peter and I were just like, we're designing the very next cheese, and we had it down, and both of us had been thinking about this cheese and hadn't talked about it and wanted to do the same style, and Rachel was like, hold on to the reins. Let's work this one out.
That's great.
So, it's the cheesemaker's dilemma. We're always working on
the next one.
The next one. We can't stop thinking. And isn't it just a joy to listen to this man talk
about
vels and abomasums and making your own rennet?
Well, I love it.
It's great.
I mean, I come from when I learned about cheese, I didn't learn about cheese as a cheesemaker, but there was very specific and clear information to me a long time ago, and I had discussions like that, salt, rennet, culture, and the milk, and it's gotten very complicated since then, like it really has. There's a lot, but I just hold on to those same things, and everybody, are you making your own cultures at Bertrand?
Yeah, we are making our own cultures. And, it's interesting because Rachel and Peter, they've been doing it so long, it's just second nature to them. It's just like a kid on a farm raised running tractors. They just know everything
about it
and can do it. For me, I'm not as fluid as they are and as smooth. And it's like I find myself, selecting the cows and selecting the milk, going through the process, and then, you know, incubating the milk. And I don't have an incubator. Uh-huh. And so it's been kind of a fun little project for me because, you know, I'm using a cooler, very scientific,
absolutely,
hot water bath. And I'll come down in the morning and I'll realize it's 120 degrees in there, and now I've selected absolutely the wrong cultures, the thermophiles, when we wanted mesophiles. And so then I start the process all over again. And so, you know, the education and the timing and having the tools to do it properly is really important. You know, you guys have figured it all out because you have a system in place. So now... Yes, they have a system in place. And so now what I've done is we've stepped it up. We have a bread proofer so that I can incubate the cultures at, you know, the temperature we've decided and really finesse the process in a more fluid manner rather than willy-nilly,
sure,
with a hot water bath in my cooler.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that for me, cheese makers, cheesemongers, and cheese is always about taking stuff that doesn't quite fit and turning it into things that fit really well. You know what I mean?
Right.
So every cheesemonger or, like, people who had the old school shops was like, yeah, you know, we have all these buckets of water turned upside down, and I took part of my fish aquarium and I pumped the water up, and it breaks up like that, and that's how I humidified my shit here, and that's why mine's the best. You know what I mean? Or like maybe, you know, like you have this old Coleman cooler, and that's the best. That's the best incubator you have. You know what I mean? And so I don't know if it's willy-nilly. It's just a consistent process of experimentation, what works, right?
You know? Yeah, that's right. Because, you know, I'm just not spending 8 hours a day incubating cultures. We're milking cows.
You got
we're
a farm
cheese.
To run.
Yeah, we have other things to do. So to get this system in place is really important. And if it is incubating in a cooler for somebody, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, or incubate it during the day when you can check it.
Mm-hmm.
Periodically through the day instead
of
overnight.
Well, that's the systems. You got to
set
up the systems.
The system's really important.
Yeah, that's what my whole life revolves around systems, you know?
Right.
And most of them are little tiny things that exist only in my mind. So, like, in work, you know, they're always like, well, we want to know how you do it. And I'm like, I can't really explain how I do it. I just sort of do it.
Here.
And then someone follows me, and then we do it that way. And then the next thing you know, four people know how to do it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
But that doesn't work. The mentalities of a... Well, like you say, you're going to limit the amount of milk that can be used, you know, which eliminates an entire spectrum of cheese making, which is a good thing, not to exclude, but it's a good thing because it's just like none of that's going to happen, you know? And your processes, your organic, very organic processes that are time tested, you know, for literally thousands of years get to take over. And I think that's mm-hmm. That's pretty cool stuff, you know. I mean, I'm really down to get some of this cheese whenever I can get it.
Well, you got some right there on the plate. Go ahead and try some. Tell us what you think.
I don't eat a lot of cheese on the air because I don't feel like people just want to hear my sloppy noises.
That stuff is great. That was a joke.
I don't know. I think you really wanted me to eat it.
No.
I'm trying to figure out how I can steal the entire block that's sitting up there. But seriously, when can we buy the cheese? Or is it already being sold?
Yes, we made some batches this summer. So this is the seventh batch we made. We have some larger ones and smaller ones. So the number doesn't necessarily represent how many how many pieces were made in each batch. But this is the seventh one, and we brought. And as you can see, it's got a fairly open texture.
Yeah, a little bit of eyes.
It's kind of creamy. It's not what I'd call a hard cheese. It's semi-hard.
No, it looks like Dobbiaco a little bit.
Okay, there you go.
Which I like.
Write that down.
Trentino cheese.
I've heard Raschera mentioned.
Yeah, Raschera, Northern Italian.
Raschera, there it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you, what else is on the horizon? You got this crazy thing going on, but what else is on the horizon for your creameries this year?
Well, I think I wanted to jump in a little bit about this collaborative nature.
Yeah.
I just have to get back to that.
Please.
To me, that's just such an important part of this community, to see people working together.
Absolutely.
You know, we've gotten away from that.
I believe we have.
You know, I think we've talked about that before. But I think that's so important that we're sharing ideas. We're sharing ideas. We're sharing methods. We're sharing processes so that we can all get better.
Yeah.
And, you know, and get back and work on something else in our creamery, which is pretty cool. But Yeah, so back to your question.
No.
What's next?
but that's what this thing is. Like it gives you, the cheese gives you a forum to work together, right? I mean.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the things that happened early on, the first several batches that we made, we tried a couple, we changed the process a little bit. We changed the way that we hooped. And what, I mean, we knew that it would have different results, and it definitely had different results. And then it became a matter of deciding
what kind of texture we
wanted.
That's amazing. The texture, that's my thing. Like, uh-huh. And I've been really getting in there, like on it. And it, for me, that's what I've used my whole time selling cheese, you know? Because I think way, way, way back, I bought a Morbier that was great. And then I got another one that wasn't. And this is when I was like 18 or 19 years old. And I was like, something's wrong with this, you know? But I didn't know shit about cheese anyway. But I knew that the second one wasn't as good as the first one, even though it tasted the same. Mm-hmm. And that was because the way I ate it and the way it felt in my mouth, the second one was not good. It felt like trying to eat a slippery tire, uh-huh. you know? And nobody wants to try to eat a slippery tire.
Well, for new things, I think the three of us have spent a lot of time together over the years, and we're very comfortable with our two companies working together. And you might see some collaborative marketing
going awesome.
On. You know, because Pennsylvania is not that far away from where we are in Vermont.
And I have roots there.
Oh, that's great.
And,
so.
You know, it's nice to go to Bertrand Hills. It's a really nice farm. And Sue's
with new stuff
husband
happening.
And boys are fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they like to come up to Vermont, too. So I think we're going to see more of that.
Great farmers making great milk.
Yeah. A little farming exchange program, perhaps.
Now,
farming, cheese making, all of it.
We were talking about, they're already, Sue and her family, they're already raising veal from their own cows. We were talking about maybe, because we now own the property that we've been renting previously where we make our cheese.
Uh-huh.
And there's a pasture there, and we were talking about maybe raising calves from the Putney Schools dairy farm where we buy our milk for veal, and then using those stomachs, you know, to make our own rennet. So this is the kind of thing we're looking forward to doing. I don't know if we're going to pull it off this year, but
we're not.
You know, it's certainly the voice of reason.
Hey, you've got like 46 days to get that done in this year.
But I can't think of anything else as major as really those. But Sue must have some things.
Yeah, what do you got? What do you got? Talk to me.
Building a creamery.
Oh, right.
Fingers
well,
are getting
yeah.
pointed.
That's right. They
building
are, they
a creamery
are.
Is a
they
fairly are. Big thing.
Yeah, so we are building a creamery on the farm, and we
that's
thought
great.
We would have it up and going by now. So we're definitely behind. We work in a little rented, quirky facility about 4 miles down the road, and have really thought it would be built last year. But, you know, design,
construction,
regulatory agencies sort of take their time. And,
yes.
And you know what? Maybe that's not such a bad thing because there's always more information presents itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So hopefully, you know, the next time I see you, Greg, we'll be in there or, you know,
I would love
up
that.
And running. You'll have to come down and visit. But, you know, Peter sat at the table with us and Rachel to design this facility.
The plans look really good.
They do.
Amazing.
I'm jealous.
That's great.
We'll see.
I want one of those.
And then
I need
to be able to get some cheese from you. So I mean, I'm really you know, I have like got you in here, and this I can have him lock the door out of there. And,
but then
know,
she make can't
you,
make cheese.
Yeah,
that is what I like about you, Greg. Yeah. You always want cheese.
I do. I really
so good.
Do.
It makes me excited.
It's nice having cheese. Makes me you know. Happy. It's good. Good to have it around.
Makes us happy, too.
Makes us happy, too.
So we'll have more to share.
Awesome.
Yay.
Well, I want to say thank you to all of you guys for coming and for this lively discussion and always informative. You guys are the best. So, you know, take a look out for Cornerstone. Get it. Sell it. Buy it. Understand what it is and how come it's important. Thanks a lot for listening to Cutting the Curd. We'll be back next week with more cheesy stuff. Take care.
Thanks Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.